This is another edition of the Gold Standard Podcast. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera, and as always, with me, the man, the myth, the legend, Levin Black.
I like it. Your intro for me is improving.
It's always good. What are you talking about?
I don't know. Sometimes you kind of undercut me there. Called me a man, a myth, and a legend all at once. I like it.
Well, was it two weeks ago, you referred to yourself as the Jerry Rice of co-pilots. So I don't know if we're improving, but here we are.
Well, I mean, Jerry Rice is a man, a myth to a certain degree, and certainly a legend.
So here's what we're going to do this week. We're going to start sort of bigger picture. I don't know what to do with that, so I'm just flying past it. We're going to start bigger picture. And I want to get into some of the things I've seen nationally about the 49ers, because I was nervous about the week one game, and then I saw all the basically the disrespect, for lack of a better word, and now I'm just fired up, and I want to see the Niners come out and smash Arizona. So we'll start big picture, then we'll get into the Arizona game a little bit, and then we're going to get into some of the issues in California right now and how they could affect the 49ers, maybe not this week, but at some point during the season. So first up, Levin, I know there's a lot of predictions out there, and I know that you don't make a big splash unless you say something crazy, but the stuff I'm seeing, you got to explain it to me. Pete Prisco comes out with power rankings. He has the 49ers fourth, which is crazy to me. But he's fourth, and it's the third best team in the NFC behind Green Bay and New Orleans. In what universe are the 49ers worse than the Packers and the Saints?
I mean, how did the Packers improve? What did they do? Oh, they spent their first-round pick on a backup quarterback. I mean, there's no justification for having Green Bay there. That's the type of thing that I have a really hard time biting my tongue on, because I think it's cheap journalism. And I think, to a certain degree, I personally think it's unprofessional, because it's not truth. There's no way he believes that. So to me, he's saying something just to get a reaction, just to get attention. And I don't like that as a journalist, if I'm being honest. It bothers me when I see things like that, that is so clearly obvious. I'm doing this just to get attention.
And now, he's not the only one that have the Saints ahead of the 49ers, which I don't understand either. Like, I'm sorry. The Saints, no team gacks it up in the postseason more than the New Orleans Saints. Just look at their history. The Music City Miracle, or the Music City Miracle, the Minneapolis Miracle, I'm getting my miracles confused. The Minneapolis Miracle, then against the Rams. Yes, I know it was a bad call, but you know what? You got the ball first in overtime with your Hall of Fame quarterback and your amazing head coach, and you threw an interception and you gacked that one away too. I mean, what have the New Orleans Saints done in the playoffs to make you think that they're better than the 49ers? They couldn't even get the chance to play the 49ers in the postseason because they got their ass beat by Kirk Cousins.
Well, I got a couple things here. One, a power rankings doesn't necessarily mean Super Bowl, who they think will be the Super Bowl champs. It's just what roster at this point seems the best, along with keeping in mind the coaching. And I don't agree with the Saints being above the Niners, but I can at least see a reasoning behind it, because they did take Emmanuel Sanders away from the Niners. They improved, and they improved at the expense of the Niners losing a valuable player. Now, the Niners, I think, will be able to replace Sanders relatively well, but I think there's very little argument against the Saints having a better roster now than what they did. They didn't really lose any key pieces.
Who's on the Saints' defense? The Saints' defense is not better than the 49ers' defense.
No, but
it's not close. It's not close.
It's not. Okay, it depends. I mean, is the Niners clearly better? Yes. Do the Saints still have a good defense? I think they do. I think they have a good defense, and I think they're going to have an improved offense. And, you know, you're forgetting they have Taysom Hill.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Look out, world.
Number two.
Taysom Hill is the number two quarterback in New Orleans. Holy shit. Look out. Who knows what could happen? There's no stopping them now. See, you did it on purpose. You did it on purpose to me, Levin.
Yeah, I had to wait. I had to have the serious conversation before I sidetracked it there.
You set me up, and it worked perfectly. But, I mean, he's not alone. Connor Orr from Sports Illustrated says the 49ers are going to go 8-8, and they're going to be last in the NFC West. Last in the NFC West, Levin.
Yeah, I don't get that. I can see. Again, I don't agree with it, but I can at least see a reasoning for the Niners not winning the division. I mean, in a lot of things, bettors will tell you always pick the better quarterback. Well, the best quarterback in the division is no question Russell Wilson. Agreed. I mean, only Patrick Mahomes is better than him, in my opinion, in the league. And I don't think it's, I think there's actually a pretty sizable gap between one and two and then two and three. I think once you get down to three, you start getting into a true argument. But I think number one is no argument, Patrick Mahomes. Number two is no argument, Russell Wilson. So I can at least see, using that reasoning, picking them. But to say the Niners are going 8-8, unless your reasoning is the Niners will be injury ravaged, which could happen, I don't see it. I mean, how do you have that as a reasoning? I mean, that we've talked about it in previous shows. They have everything going for them because not only do they have one of the best talent in the league, but they also have as much returning players as any team in the league, and they have the same schemes, which is going to be a huge advantage during this COVID season when there were no OTAs and there was no preseason.
I totally agree with you. The Rams have three new coordinators, P.S. That ain't going to be fun with the shortened off season, like we said. I mean, in the Seahawks, you got Russell Wilson begging his coach to let him throw the damn ball. Literally, in interviews, he's asking them to let him throw the ball. And the Cardinals, I'm sorry. Can the Cardinals do something first before we all start shaking in our boots? Can they do anything? Can their coach finish over 500? He couldn't do it at Texas Tech, and they were 5-10-1 last year. Like, let's see Arizona do something before we all start saying that they're this up-and-coming great team. It's driving me nuts, man. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think the Arizona Cardinals, the reason people are pumping them so hard is they're looking at it and going, well, hey, they're the 49ers of this upcoming season. They're the team that didn't win a lot of games, drafted highly, but have all the talent needed to win a bunch of games. But what the Niners did last season is something that very rarely happens in this league. To go from drafting number two overall to 13 wins, I can't remember if they're the only team to do it or only the second team to do it, but it's not going to happen. I mean, Arizona, they might fight for the playoffs. I could see them doing that, but there's also something to be said for a team that hasn't done it before learning to do it. It was different with the Niners last year because they had Jimmy Garoppolo. He was in New England for a long time. Arizona has Kyler Murray. He's in his second season. He's never done it before. He's never gone through the rigors of truly being in high-pressure situations. There was no pressure on him last year. I mean, he had to live up to his number one draft spot, but that was it. And it's not hard to look decent and not get a bunch of criticism as a rookie quarterback because nobody expects much out of a rookie quarterback. Now the pressure is on to win. He will get criticism if they only win 5-6 games again. He might even get criticism if they only win 7 or 8 games. It's a whole different ballgame for him, and he's got to have some experience in that. It's very rare for a quarterback to just instantly start winning all the time.
And I totally agree. There are teams every year that we don't see coming that take a big jump and make a move. But you know what? There are also teams every year that we pump up going into the season like they're going to be awesome, and they stink. And we saw it last year with the Cleveland Browns. And I feel like the two teams that are candidates for that this year are the Cardinals and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We love the Cards and the Bucks going into the season. And all I'm saying is, I just want to see somebody there do something before we start saying they're better than the 49ers, who won 13 games last year and were 6 minutes away from winning the damn Super Bowl.
I mean, the Niners were that team 2 years ago.
That's true.
After the Jimmy Garoppolo 5 straight wins to end the season, everybody was saying, hey, they're coming in. They're the new force to be reckoned with. Well, injuries happened, but they were a force last year, but not the year that they were picked. Last year, nobody wanted to pick them because they got burned so bad the previous year.
All right, let's dive into this Arizona game a little bit more. 49ers favored by 6.5, according to our friends at DraftKings. The over-under for the game is 48. Do either one of those numbers jump out to you, Levin?
I could see 48 being something I would be willing to bet on if I was a betting man, because I do think it would be high scoring. The 6.5, that one's difficult for me because, one, I don't like picking winners in week one because much is unknown. But two, the Cardinals were a tough out last year for the Niners. Murray gave them problems because quarterbacks who can get away from Bosa give them problems. I think Dee Ford could end up being the key to this game because he has the speed to chase him down. And we saw it once last year. He chased Murray down from behind. Bosa doesn't have that top end speed. I mean, you got to have true top end speed to do that. I think Ford could be a real big key to this game that nobody's talking about. His speed on the outside could really contain Murray and force Murray to either step up into Kinlaw and Eric Armstead or try to escape to the other side where Bosa is.
It was interesting to hear Bosa yesterday say, basically, we know where Kyler likes to go. We know where he likes to escape. We know how he likes to scramble, which side he likes to scramble to. He said flat out, we have a better plan now against Kyler Murray than they did last year, which I don't know if Kyle Shanahan likes that, but I was surprised to hear Bosa just basically come out and say it.
I mean, there is something to be said for that too. Murray was a rookie last year. Nobody knew what his tendencies were. He didn't even play that much in college. So they didn't know, like Bosa said, where he was going to go. Quarterbacks do tend to have certain spots they like to scramble to because they feel like they can read the defense going that direction, or they can still pass well running that direction on the move. So they like to get to the same spots when they're trying to get away from a defense. And if you know that and you beat him to the spot, he's going to have to go to a spot he's uncomfortable with, and thus he might be throwing from an uncomfortable spot, or be more willing to hold the ball because he's uncomfortable allowing you to get the sack.
Which do you think is more likely? That the Cardinals are going to have basically a whole new bag of tricks for the 49ers to deal with, and they're going to be able to continue to move the ball? Or Robert Saleh spent this whole offseason figuring out how to stop the Cardinals since he couldn't do it at all last year?
That's tough because they have DeAndre Hopkins. So that offense could change dramatically from what the Niners saw last year, or the league saw last year. It's hard to know because Kingsbury does love to pass the ball. Now, last year, Kenyon Drake was a problem for the 49ers.
Yes.
He ran very well against the 49ers. So are they going to come out saying, hey, we're going to run the ball until the Niners can prove to stop it in that wide nine format? We're not going to risk dropping back to pass and allowing those pass rushers to come at us. Or are they going to come out and say, hey, we have one of, if not the best wide receivers in the league, plus Larry Fitzgerald, plus Cameron Kirk. We're going to pass the ball, and we believe nobody can stop us. It will be interesting to see. I think that will be a bit of a chess match because I could see that kind of being flipped at different points in the game, where Kingsbury is trying to play a chess match where he's going to pass. Next drive, he's going to come out and try to run, and just keep the defense guessing.
And one nice thing for the 49ers defense, Fred Warner did come off the COVID-19 list after 10 days. He is ready to go. He will be in there for the Niners. No worries there. You could tell Kyle was a little worried, like, hey, if we don't have this guy, then we got to move Kwan to the middle, and we got to have Dre and Azeez Al-Shaair on the other side. Like, he was not comfortable with those linebackers without Fred in there.
And Fred, I mean, it's an underrated aspect, but Fred is the guy who takes in the play calls on the defense. That is a huge thing. Being the general of a defense, losing that, it's something that not everybody is capable of doing. You know, some people are not capable of dealing with that and then being able to transition into his individual responsibilities and reading the defense offense pre-snap and making his own adjustments while also looking at things for other players. That's an important role that Fred Warner's very good at, and he took over that role as a rookie. I mean, we saw Reuben Foster struggle with that. They tried to make him do it when he was still on the team as a rookie, and it didn't go over very well. Fred Warner excels at that, and I think that's a very underrated part of him coming back. It's not just getting a really good linebacker back. It's getting the guy that organizes the whole defense pre-snap.
So with DeAndre Hopkins, you mentioned him. Do you think Kingsbury just puts him on the opposite side of the field from Sherman and says, you stay there all game? Or do you think he says, you know what, I think you can run right past Richard Sherman, DeAndre, go for it?
I think he'll move around quite a bit. I think there's going to be a feeling out period for what works. I'm not sure Hopkins is the prototypical wide receiver for that offense, because typically a spread offense that loves to be pass heavy loves speed. He's not a speed guy. I'm also curious to see, I could see that marriage not working out very well. Because what have we seen out of Hopkins? He's a guy that has an enormous catch radius, that if you throw it up high accurately, he's going to beat the DB and get the ball. He actually doesn't excel at getting separation. He excels at winning the jump balls. Well, Kyler Murray, if he has one negative, it's that he doesn't have pinpoint accuracy. So is he going to be willing to say, well, Hopkins isn't necessarily open, but the DB has his back turned. So if I make this throw a little bit high, I know Hopkins will go up and get it. Is he going to be willing to do that? Is he going to be able to do that accurately? I think that's something that should be watched for. And I could see Hopkins getting frustrated because not all quarterbacks are going to be willing to trust a wide receiver they haven't played with before to just throw it up there and trust that he's going to get it.
Or at least trust that the defense isn't going to get it. And that's something I heard Michael Irvin talk about on 95.7 The Game this week. He said basically the way receivers earn their quarterback's trust isn't by making catches and making plays. It's by at least making sure that the defender doesn't make plays. If I do throw it up to you one-on-one, I know it's not going to be intercepted. You might not catch it, but I have total faith in you that we're going to get this ball back. And I thought that was a really interesting thing that I had never heard before. And that could be something that maybe, you know, down the line later in the season, they have that sort of trust. But in week one, like you said, they might not have it built up yet.
Right. And like I said, Hopkins does not excel at getting separation. He's never been a league leader in separations. He's not a Julio Jones that has crazy speed and is going to burn guys. He's a guy that gets open just enough to have a window for the quarterback. That takes trust from the quarterback. That takes time to develop.
Let's flip it over to the other side of the ball now for the 49ers. We all know Garoppolo was awesome against the Cardinals last year. He completed 76% of his passes, almost 800 yards in two games, 8 touchdowns, 2 picks. But I'm starting to get a little nervous, Levin, because I don't think he's going to have Deebo Samuel, and I don't think he's going to have Brandon Ayuk. So that means the starting wide receivers may be Kendrick Bourne and Dante Pettis. How do you feel about that?
I don't feel great, but this is a game that could announce the two tight end look for the Niners right out of the gate. Because if they're low on wide receivers, I could see them saying, you know what? We're going to line up with Jordan Reed out there. We're going to line up with Kittle out there on the other side. And we're going to run with two wide receivers and we're going to run a lot, but we're also going to pass out of that formation. So the defense never knows what's coming. And based on what we see pre-snap, we'll make our adjustments and change the play if we need to beat the defense that's out there, because that's a formation that they could go out there and line up the exact same way every single play, yet run anything. They could run a deep pass. They could run play action. They could run an outside run, an inside run. They can do anything. And when you have two tight ends that are great receivers, that creates a very big problem for the defense, because they don't have the ability to get a guess at what's going to be coming on the play like a normal set would. You know, if you line up with your fullback in the backfield and the tight end lined up close to the line, probably going to be a run on first down. You don't have that option with that formation. I could see Kyle going to that quite a bit.
All summer, we've heard about how good Jerick McKinnon looks and how good Jordan Reed looks. If there was ever going to be one game where we get to see that, right? It's going to be this game. First game of the season. This is the healthiest they're going to be all year. Hopefully we can at least get 4 quarters of these two guys on the field. Because like you said, when you talked about the two tight ends, I immediately thought of, then you have McKinnon in the backfield. Maybe you motion him out of the backfield to put him on the line. Like the possibilities are endless.
Right. So, I mean, imagine lining up in like a true I formation with two tight ends where you have Juice and Jet in the backfield. You could literally pre-snap motion anybody anywhere. Juice can go out wide. He's done it before. Jet can go out wide. You can have Kittle come into the backfield and have some kind of wishbone weird formation, or you could have him go out wide. You could have Jordan Reed do all the same things. It's a formation that has endless pre-snap possibilities, and it could literally be go line up. When we see what defense comes out, we'll get the play and we'll start it. It's going to be a game. Kyle loves pre-snap motion. It's going to be a game, I think, with a lot more than even Kyle normally runs.
Well, and that's why I think that so much pressure is on Jimmy Garoppolo, because I feel like the point of all those motions and everything is to find out what the defense is doing, what kind of coverage they're in. Is it man? Is it zone? Who's going to be on this guy if we put him in the slot? It's all designed to make it easy for your quarterback to make the right read, to make the right throw quickly. If he's still throwing interceptions the way he threw interceptions last year, I wonder if Shanahan's patience for him is going to be less than maybe what it was last year, because he's got so many tools now and options to make it simple that if you can't do it in this offense, you just can't do it.
And it's Jimmy's one of these guys. It's really weird because he reads the defense really quickly. He does a pretty good job. I think he's above average at reading the defense pre-snap. But then he just has a play every once in a while that you have no clue what he was seeing, what he was doing. And it's really weird because he actually excels at a lot of the things that would lead you to low interceptions. But then he just has these one-off or two-offs in a game that are like, where'd that come from? It doesn't make any sense because 99% of the time, he's great at that. It's really weird because it's hard. It makes it hard to truly, I want to say evaluate. I don't know if that's the right word. But when a guy excels at all those aren't easy things to find. That's one of the keys to being a truly great quarterback, is being able to make those pre-snap adjustments and make quick, get through your progressions really quickly. If we're wanting to go there, we could say that's the thing that Colin Kaepernick struggled at most as a quarterback. It's what kept him from becoming truly great and just staying as an average to above average quarterback that he was. He wasn't great at getting through his progressions quickly, and he wasn't great at reading the defense pre-snap at all. That takes film study, and it also takes just a knack for it. And Jimmy has it, but then he also has these weird interceptions that are the worst interception you've ever seen.
And here's the weird thing about this season. Because of what happened in the Super Bowl, every game is going to be a referendum about Jimmy Garoppolo. But it's only going to work against him. And what I mean is, if he wins against the Cardinals, even if he has a good game, which he had two against them last year, people are going to say, oh, yeah, he should. That's fine. It's Shanahan, whatever. Doesn't matter till the playoffs. Let's see him do it in a big spot. But if he loses, if the 49ers don't win, if he does have even just an okay game, what are we going to hear? Oh, here we go again. Look at Jimmy, same guy as last year. You know, he's being carried by Kyle Shanahan. Can't get it done in the Super Bowl. He couldn't get it done this week. Like, it's going to be constant every week till the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, even if Jimmy has an amazing start to the season, I mean, unless he's throwing four or five touchdowns every week, but let's say, you know, he's putting up 300 yards, getting a couple touchdowns every week, not throwing interceptions, the Niners are winning, nobody's going to give him the credit he deserves. And I mean, I could see a scenario where the Niners are like, say, 6-2, one of the leaders in the NFC at the midway break, and people start looking at the MVP race and see Jimmy Garoppolo towards the top of the rankings and a lot of stats and go, wait, is Jimmy Garoppolo really an MVP candidate? I mean, I could see that season happening because I could see this is an offense that's going to put up points. He's going to have a lot of opportunities for touchdowns. If he does a better job of converting in the red zone, I mean, he already had 27 touchdowns last year. If they just do a little bit better converting in the red zone where they were only mediocre at, he could have a 30 touchdown season.
And that's, I think, where that I formation that you mentioned is going to be just a nightmare for defensive coordinators. I mean, like you said, you line up your two tight ends, Juice, Jet. I mean, good luck trying to figure out what they're going to do in the red zone. They can audible at the line based on what you're going to do. So the tools are there. It's all set up there to just be an unstoppable offense. I just hope that Jimmy lets them be that, basically. The only thing that could stop them is him.
That to me is kind of a bold statement. I mean, he's certainly the one that could most easily stop this offense. I mean, the running backs, they could lose Mostert and probably be okay. They could lose Jet and probably be okay. I mean, the running backs, they would be okay unless multiple go down and then they start to have issues. Wide receiver, I mean, we've already talked about it, that, hey, if they have multiple wide receivers hurt like Debo and Ayuk, they can just utilize this two tight end set. So, yes, I mean, I would say that I guess it's you feel safer with it, but if Kittle doesn't do well, he's really the key to the offense. You just don't have any question about whether he's going to play well or not. But I do think that that's a pretty bold statement saying that Garoppolo could be the only thing holding this offense back.
I mean, you know, Phil Hellmuth used to say, if it weren't for luck, I'd never lose at poker. If it weren't for turnovers, Kyle Shanahan's teams would score all the time because nobody ever actually stops them, I feel like, except themselves. And look, that's Jimmy's been the one to stop the offense mostly, but I mean, hopefully that doesn't happen. Let me ask you a question because this guy just got paid, and that's Buda Baker for the Cardinals. First play of the game, I want to see Shanahan throw a nice deep slant over the middle to Kittle, and I want Kittle and Buda Baker in the middle of the field. One, what do you think would happen? And two, do you think there's part of those guys that wants that too?
Well, of course. I mean, especially two guys like you mentioned. I mean, Kittle and Buda Baker are not just football players. They're football players. I mean, they live for the aggression, the contact, the physicalness. I mean, we've seen that when Kittle makes a pancake block and is laughing. You know, I mean, that's just, he lives for this type of thing. And Buda Baker, I think, is somebody that lives for blowing a guy up as a DB. Yeah, I think that they certainly hope for a situation like that. What would happen? I don't know. I mean, of course, I'm a Niners fan. I'm going to say, you know, Kittle's going to just run him over. But
again,
who knows? Buda Baker is a physical. He's a quality player. What I would love to see is Buda Baker get completely, not obliterated, but confused, make a mistake on the first play because of some kind of play design that completely throws him off to where he messes up and doesn't make the right read to where, like, you have a Kittle and a Jordan Reed crossing and Buda Baker stays or swaps who he's covering and so does the other guy. And so one of those two just gets completely wide open. I think that would be an awesome start to the game to just see Buda Baker completely blow a coverage and one of the tight ends go for a big gain.
Intellectually, I know you're right. But the reptile part of my brain wants to see George Kittle throw Buda Baker across the field like he did in that game last year. On one leg, by the way, which people seem to forget. Poor Buda Baker. He played a really good game that game, but all people remember is George Kittle tossing him out of the club.
Yeah, it'll be interesting this year because we've talked about it before, but there's going to be four games where Kittle is going up against a dominant, great physical safety because you also have Jamal Adams now on the Seahawks. Those are going to be marquee matchups. Those are going to be things that when those games are played that they're keying on and they're showing replays of every single play of that chess match battle, whatever you want to call it, between those two guys. And it truly is like two of the very best gladiators in the league going at it because they're physical, they're fast. I mean, they have everything and they love the contact on top of it.
I don't think that Kittle is going to be the focal point of the offense this year. I hate to say this. Like, I really hate to say this, but you may be right with your prediction. It's funny because I didn't think so at first. Then I was listening to the Shanna Plan with Kyle Posey and Akash Anavarathan. And I think it was Akash who said, I don't think we're going to see a 1,000-yard player on this team this year. And I was like, there's Levin. Like, do you guys coordinate your takes or is this just a random flash of circumstance?
I mean, we got some smart guys on this network, right?
We'll put this thing together.
So for a personal story, a personal take on this, my dad is visiting right now. And we just had our fantasy draft and we were talking about it. And I was talking about how I wanted to get a top tight end in the draft, but I actually had Kittle on my do not draft list because I knew that he's going to be drafted much higher than I think he's going to end up being. I don't think he's going to be the top fantasy tight end. I don't even think he's going to be the second fantasy tight end this year. I think he's going to be the fourth or fifth tight end because I think there's going to look, he's not a touchdown machine.
No,
he's just not. So he's somebody that needs a lot of catches and yards to score his points. I think this ball is going to be spread around too much for him to stockpile like he did 2 years ago or even a year ago. And I think that there's quite a few tight ends out there that are going to beat him in yards, catches, and touchdowns.
So last week we did make the bet. You think that nobody's going to get 1,000 yards. We got a lot of good suggestions. You won't eat the ghost pepper, which I'm still very upset about because clearly that would be the best and I would like to see you in physical pain and suffering. But would you be willing to shave the facial hair except for the mustache and shave everything else?
Well, what do you have to counter with this? I mean, you don't even have facial hair.
I'm not going to lose, so it's irrelevant.
And I mean, this would be a punishment for me, but I mean, I think the fans want something that they get to kind of partake in. Seeing me with an ugly mustache, I mean, I'm already ugly over here. So
we're stacking ugly on ugly.
Plus, I mean, like I said, what are you going to do that's equal? Because this beard, this joke of a beard that I have takes me like a month and a half to grow. So that's a pretty steep punishment for me.
Well, I mean, what do you, I will eat a ghost pepper if you want. Like, I'll do something. I'm willing to humiliate myself in front of the people. Okay. I have no pride.
I do like the idea that was brought up by a fan on Twitter to maybe do some kind of shirt punishment where you have to take a photo in a shirt and have that as your Twitter profile pic. I suggested make it a long time. Make it the time period between the Super Bowl and the draft. That's a couple months where your Twitter profile has to be a shirt of our choosing, or maybe the fans can weigh in to give us ideas. I mean, I think yours is clearly going to have to be something that's Taysom Hill related, because it's not only a team you don't like, but it's a player you despise. But I think that's a pretty good idea. We would have to come up with a shirt that we would both hate to wear, and, you know, probably one different one for each of us. But I think that's a pretty good punishment. We could always obviously do the Twitter pick of something that you don't want. But I think it's all the more personal when it's actually you sitting in the picture.
Here's the thing too. Like some people just kind of float away because they're mostly fantasy players, but there's a lot of stuff that happens between the Super Bowl and the draft. So there's going to be a lot of stuff that I'm tweeting about the team. You know, we're still going to be doing podcasts, so I'm going to be tweeting out links and stuff to that. So that's rough, because I'm going to be out there still posting stuff for free agency and the draft and the combine and all that stuff, especially this year at the combine, because of what sort of train wreck we're going to get for a college football season. The combine is going to be huge. So that is a punishment, I have to admit.
I could see your Twitter bio being Taysom Hill's number one fan. And then, hey, look on the bright side. You would gain a whole bunch of Saints followers.
Awesome. Great. We can sit and cry about officiating together.
Yeah, and I can only imagine when that goes away and they realize who you really are and the topic of Taysom Hill comes up, they're like, wait, why am I following this guy?
Here's the thing. I don't really have a problem with Taysom Hill himself. I don't really know that much about him. It's the way everybody reacts to Taysom Hill that really drives me up the wall. Like, Florio had a post on PFT. Taysom Hill is the Saints' backup quarterback. Some people write him off because he's only thrown 13 career passes. Yes, Mike. Yes. That's why we write him off, because he's only thrown 13 passes. He's 30 years old. And if he was any damn good, the Saints would have let him start last year when Breeze was hurt.
I think the age is the key discrepancy here. Now, obviously, Florio is writing that because he knows he'll get clicks. People like to read about Taysom Hill and all that. But I think the casual fan has no idea Taysom Hill is as old as he is, because he only started getting talked about, I mean, a little bit 2 years ago, but a lot last year. I think a lot of people think that he's some diamond in the rough that they just found, and he's 25 years old, ready to enter his prime. Like a Jimmy Garoppolo or something. Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't a diamond in the rough. He was a second round pick, but you know, like a quality backup that's just waiting for his time behind a Hall of Fame quarterback. No, he's a 30-year-old guy. If he was that good, somebody would have offered a king's ransom for him already. They would have offered a second round pick to get him. But I think it's pretty clear nobody has. And oh, by the way, if he was that good, they wouldn't have signed Jameis Winston.
They did give Taysom Hill an extension this offseason.
Yeah, I think they believe he has a lot of potential. I think they believe that Peyton can get the best out of him, but that doesn't mean another coach is going to be able to create some kind of decent quarterback. I mean, the fact remains, they went out and signed Jameis Winston. I don't think it's a coincidence. They went out and signed the young guy with a world of potential to potentially be the replacement for Breeze. If they believed in Taysom Hill, they would not be signing somebody like Jameis Winston, who clearly wants to start.
That is enough Taysom Hill. The Gold Standard podcast has nothing to do with the Saints or Taysom Hill. You did it on purpose. That's twice now you got me, and I'm not falling for it anymore. That is it.
Just wait until, you know, they play again.
Yeah. In New
Taysom
Orleans,
Hill week.
Because apparently the Niners always have to go to New Orleans.
Yeah, I do find that odd that they're always going to New Orleans.
And one time they came to the stick, we kicked their All right. There's no easy way to transition to what we're going to talk about now. So I'm just going to do it. I'm sure if you're a Niner fan, you follow all the beat writers. You've seen the pictures of California right now. It is like nothing I've ever seen before, Levin. It's orange. It's literally orange outside. And it's a scary situation.
Right. I mean, it's not some kind of San Francisco Giants celebration where they let off a whole bunch of orange fog or something like that. I mean, it's from a fire and it's on the doorstep of the Niners. I think this is something that should be getting more talk than it is by the national pundits. There's a very real chance that pretty much any day, I mean, it could never come, could be a week from now, could be a month from now, but it could also be tomorrow where these wildfires are, the wind blows just right, or they spread to the right spot, the Niners will be without a home. I mean, it's close enough to them that the air quality could get so bad so quickly that they can't practice in Santa Clara. They can't play in Santa Clara. And I think it's an underrated thing that's just going unnoticed. Everybody's so worried about, I think, the start of the season that they're not talking about the very real possibility that at some point this season, the Niners are going to have to play somewhere else.
Kyle was talking about it yesterday, and he said it looks post-apocalyptic is what he said. But he said, believe it or not, the air quality is actually better than it was at points earlier this year. I think he said it was 69, which if you don't know the air quality scale, congratulations, you're like the rest of us. But I did just happen to look this up. It goes from 0 to 500, and at about 150 is when they say it's unhealthy. And Shanahan said it was like 69. So they're okay right now. You'd like it to be down closer to 50 or even below. But like you said, the wind changes and the whole situation changes.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that could literally overnight go from not that bad to catastrophic to where nobody really needs to be outside. You don't know. It's the weather. It's unpredictable. It's a fire. It's unpredictable. They're struggling to contain it. And this isn't like normal years. I think there's also some bit of that going on that, well, they have wildfires every year. The amount of acres that are burning this year in California, I forget the exact number, but I know last year it was 119,000 acres. And this year it's well over a million. I mean, it's
a million.
Yes. It is so much worse than before. One of the beat writers posted about it today. It is so much worse than other years. And I mean, if you live in that area, you got to be hoping for an early winter, even though winter doesn't get that bad there. But I mean, it's crazy how bad it is. I know you're looking it up. Am I wrong? I remember seeing the tweet today, but I forgot to bookmark it so that I could find it before the show.
I can't find that particular tweet. I'm stuck now because people are tweeting pictures. It looks like an Instagram filter. It's that orange. It's like pumpkin spice took over the world. It is unbelievable.
Right. I think it's a very real story, and I think it's something worth talking about that if the Niners are forced out of Santa Clara, where do they go? Where do they play? I think there's a very obvious answer, at least a little bit of, to a broad degree. Pac-12 is not playing football this year. There's some empty stadiums in the Pac-12. There's some Pac-12 stadiums that they could rent, give the college some income, and also have a quality stadium to play in that could be away from these fires and also not that far from home because it's the Pac-12, it's the West Coast. I think that's a very interesting dynamic, and I think it's something that honestly a beat writer should be looking into, that if they are forced from home, where are the most likely places to play?
Don't you feel so much better about the team knowing that if that does happen, they have Kyle Shanahan here instead of, say, oh, I don't know, Jim Tom Sula? Like, if they have to move, Kyle will figure it out. He will find a way. They will be organized. They will be proactive, adaptive, all those things. And they'll find a way to figure it out. Whereas some of the leadership we've seen in the past, not so much.
Right. And, I mean, it's – don't take this the wrong way, but of all the years for something like this to – let me put it this way. Of all the years to be forced from your home due to something like this, this might be the best in terms of competitive loss. I mean, with COVID and fans not really getting to attend games, I mean, some teams are having a small amount of fans. That being forced from your home, I mean, you're already playing, yeah, at home, but not really because you don't have the fans. It's not the same. So this, I don't want to say it, but it should be said that of all the years, this could be the best year for it to happen.
Yeah, and I know you're speaking strictly in terms of football and nothing else. That's what we're talking about here. Obviously, there's a whole other human element that with to all this stuff, but we're looking at it strictly from a football perspective. All right, I don't want to end the episode on such a sour note. So it is our last episode before the season starts. I mean, we're hours away from the start of the season. What, when the game kicks off, when it's Chiefs-Texans at 8:20 or 8:30 or whatever the hell it is, you're going to be in front of your TV. What is your beverage of choice and your food of choice to watch the game?
That's a good question because I have not really been able to think about that yet because, I mean, you know, but I guess I can let everybody else know. I just bought a house today, so I'm kind of busy at the moment. I'm certainly going to be watching.
Congratulations.
but I haven't been able to plan out like I normally would. Beverage of choice? I might have a beer. Probably I live in Pittsburgh, so a Yingling would probably be
beer. Breaking news. Adult male might have a beer while watching a football game.
For food, I'm a foodie, and I tend to get whatever I'm in the mood for. Now, certain things put me in moods for certain foods, and football certainly puts me in the mood for wings, but I just had wings last night, so it won't be wings. So I'll have to figure out something else, but normally it's wings when I'm in a football mood.
This may shock you. I have a system. I go with three H's on game day. Heineken, hot wings, Haagen-Dazs. In that order, wash, rinse, repeat every Sunday.
Well, that's Sunday. What about Thursday? You asked me about Thursday.
Well, that's true. Yeah, all right. I don't know about Thursday. But that's
come on now.
Maybe I'll have a beer.
I mean,
I'll definitely have a beer, and I will probably have a burger, to be honest, because my son loves burgers, and anytime I don't know what to make for dinner, I just ask him if he wants to eat a cheeseburger, and he's all for it.
Yeah, I love how you brought up this topic, and you were totally thinking about Sunday, which is totally different when it's a plate full of games all day long with the Niners one included.
That's true.
A different story than a Thursday game with the Chiefs involved, which right now is kind of, I don't want to see that team. I'm going to be watching, but I don't want to see that team.
Yes, I want to, right when the game starts, I don't want to see any pregame festivities, no raising of any flags of any kind.
Yeah, you know they're going to show replays throughout, though. Oh, look what the Chiefs did last year. Oh, look what they did. Oh, look what they did again.
Just twist the knife even more, NBC. Thanks.
Yeah, it should be, I think it'll be an interesting game. I mean, we don't have to pick winners or anything, but I do think the Texans are better than a lot of people think, and I'll be certainly interested to see what Deshaun Watson can do without DeAndre Hopkins, because he's one of those guys that's in the argument for the third best quarterback in the league.
Yep, and the Niners could have had both of them. Kyle Shanahan wanted Kirk Cousins, and he wasn't going to see any other – he wasn't going to date anybody else before trying to marry Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, and Tom Brady was in the sixth round, so every team could have had him. I mean, it is what it is. At some point, you got to move on, Rob.
That's not really my thing.
I'm aware. Apparently, it's my thing because I just bought a house. So,
yes, congratulations in your new house. You got to get your TV spot. Do you have your TV spot picked out? Because I bought a house last year, and the first thing I did when I looked at every house was imagine, where am I going to sit when I watch TV?
Well, they had a wall mount, and wall mounts stay with the house because they are, once they put onto a wall, it's considered part of the structure. So yes, I know where my TV is going because there's already a wall mount sitting there with it.
You didn't get to pick it.
I did not get to pick it, but it's the obvious choice.
Okay.
Because
all right, sure.
There's a wall, and then there's a massive window on the other wall. So it pretty clearly has to be on that wall.
All right. It's just as long as you got the important things squared away.
Yeah, that it all needs to be set up, but there will be games, many.
Well, if you need any advice, you have my number. I'm always available.
I think I'm a grown adult and I can make my own choices in this regard, but I appreciate the offer.
All right. So that grown adult and this child will be back next week for the Golden State Podcast. Go Niners, and we will see you next week.